Now we have about 15 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes. So the floor is open. Any questions, comments? Yes, Naku.
Thank you. Very interesting presentations. I just have a slight question on this Ajit's presentation with regard to these jobless records in the U.S. Personally, I'm still not convinced that men's share is substantially so much higher compared to the women's joblessness. You know, the number of, you know, the share of between men and women in terms of number of jobs lost. What I don't know is in the U.S. whether the people who can claim, and if this is based on the administrative records, people who are claiming the unemployment insurance, for instance, no? I wonder if it's possible that women might have been employed in such a way that they could not even have the right to claim the unemployment insurance, therefore they might be undercounted. So I just have a big question mark in the fundamental statistics on this. And but I think it's been very interesting. Thank you.
Yes, please.
I have a comment and sort of a question from Maria Ziegler's paper. I mean, what I saw from your results was that most of the countries in the bottom are war-torn and have had been involved, had external intervention happen to them, you know, countries like Iraq, Afghanistan. So I know that those are outcome-based measures, but it seems to be impossible to separate the outcome-based measures from these social institutions and the level of development that a country is at. So I don't know how much is gained by the kind of measure that you're proposing, given that there seemed to be a fairly high correlation between outcome-based measures and this institutional measure. That's my comment and sort of a question. And I also think the fact that the OECDs were at zero shows that the choices that you made were very much culturally defined as the types of issues that the brown people are dealing with and not what's happening in the OECD countries. So I would really strongly urge you to think a little bit about the cultural context within which you are constructing these measures of institutional bias in terms of gender.
Yes.
Question for Ajit. You said that regarding impacts, gender impacts in jobs for the Obama plan were at least ambiguous, because on one side you said it was beneficial for women, and the other side the share of participation of women was. But in general, this plan was redistributive, it was progressive. In that case, could you say something about the quality of, maybe the quality of these jobs? Because usually when you have these recovery plans, you create many jobs, but maybe these jobs are not so, maybe they are underemployed or low paid or something like that. Maybe you can say something about this, the quality of jobs created in the plan. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, so we give time to paper presenters. Can you start, Ajit, please? Yeah.
First of all, let me thank Jayati for her comments on the paper. As she said, because of the limitation on time, I was not able to get to a number of points in the paper. The paper is available on the Levy website for anyone who is interested in finding out more about the work that we did. To answer some of the questions that she raised, the first question was, do we separate out construction and other types of government expenditures? Yes, we do. The input-output model that is used is at the level of 201 industries, so it's a fairly detailed representation of the industrial structure and of where the final demand is coming from, where it's going. So it's at a very detailed level of industrial level. Yeah, the fiscal stimulus. Yes, yeah, yeah. It's allocated among different government industries that appear in the input-output table. The federal versus state and local, all the expenditures is federal in this, right? Yes, but they are mostly the transfers that we took out, the state fiscal stabilization fund and the state fiscal relief, which are the ones that are explicitly given to states to compensate for the budget shortfalls that are going on there. The rest of the money, it's true, the money is spent at the state and local level. So if your question is, do we account for the geographical distribution of the expenditures, we don't. Because that's, insofar as that is implicit in the input-output structure, it is there. Otherwise, there's no explicit accounting for it separately. About tax cuts, yeah. The value of multipliers are extremely small for tax cuts, as Kijong probably can tell us more about it. But we wanted to kind of bias the hand in favor of the administration rather than the other way around, right? So we wanted to find out what really was the best case scenario. So that was the reason. I didn't really understand the question or comment about the entry into labor force versus people staying longer. I really didn't understand the question. If you can repeat it, or...
But who don't have jobs to enter the labor force. The youth, basically.
You mean the people among the population from whom we pick the new job, people who get the jobs?
Potential labor force. Potential labor force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That includes unemployed people as well as people who are in the labor force and outside the labor force.
No, I know. I'm just saying that there's this whole issue of the newly... That, you know, people are obsessed with the newly unemployed, but they're not looking at those who are entering the labor force.
Yeah. But the pool from which we are picking the people
obviously,
to get the no jobs,
course,
that includes much larger.
No, but you see, what you did is we balanced the job loss with the job gain. You see what I'm saying?
The aggregate effect,
yes.
That's right. Yeah, the aggregate effect that turns out.
Whereas you obviously have a growing labor force.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. But we are just showing that for illustration. Because it's like a purely comparative static exercise, right? We are just comparing what, if everything remained the same, what would have happened to total employment at that time. Definitely the employment strategy has to go much more deeper and much more radical, in my view, also. So I share that view that you express. I'm all with that, all for that. The question about the job losses, whether it's biased more towards men, that is, whether men have lost as many jobs as we showed in the data, whether that is because we use administrative data. No, this is not based on administrative data. It's based on surveys of households and individuals. It's not based on UI records, unemployment insurance records, for example. The other question was about the quality of employment, what type of jobs will be created under the... You can have a variety of definitions of what the quality of employment is. I mean, one way to index it is by looking at what kind of occupations will grow, in what segment of the earnings distribution will these new jobs will be created. And we have some estimates. Actually, I have some slides here, which I didn't have the time to show. What they show, basically, is that most of the jobs will be created in the bottom rungs of the earnings distribution, and a large proportion of the jobs will be in low-skilled occupations. I think I covered all.
Okay, Ika. I want to once more to raise the issue of leisure time. One more reason why I raise this question and why it is very important for me is that in ideal society, the primary goal of the economy and whole society is the person and human development. In this regard, you see, productive work, reproductive work, and so on, together with this, it does matter how people can own their own time. How can they have relationship with their families, with their works, with their neighbors? how they can use their time. So that's why I stress mostly on leisure time. And despite the fact that we have many unemployed people in our society, even these people does not regard that they have plenty of time, and this time is only for leisure. So leisure time was regarded in my survey as a time that is left after all necessary activities they have conducted during the day or during a week. Thank you.
I don't really have much to add to what I said. Just one point occurred to me. There are evidently some schemes both in China and India, specifically designed in order to encourage or discourage discrimination against girls. I think in India, something called Balika, which provides a family on the birth of a daughter with some bank credit, I think 500 rupees. And they also provide a scholarship for each year of keeping the girl at school until graduation, and you're not allowed to touch it. It's in an interest-bearing account, and the woman is entitled to withdraw once she reaches the age of 18 and stays unmarried. Monica Dasgupta, who argues that missing girls and other female indicators seems to be moderating in favor of girls in India, attribute a lot of importance to such public policy programs. It would be interesting to see how they are affected in the present recession climate, whether they retain the program or they're likely to cut down in favor of perhaps other political alternatives.
That's all.
So concerning your question about the measurement of missing women, Stefan Glasen is the expert. He coded the countries based on estimates of gender bias in mortality and based on sex ratios of young and young people and adults. Normally what you do is that you calculate the number of females that would be alive if there would be equal treatment of the sexes. So you take information of model life tables, and I think also of fertility rates, and then you see how many women would be alive if there would be equal treatment of the sexes, and then you look what is in reality the case. And that's how you come to this number of missing women. To the second question concerning, is it worth to have such a measure of social institutions? I think that it adds another perspective because it measures the power of women, the power of women in the family. We have indicators of family law, so whether women can inherit from their husband, whether they can be the legal guardian of their children, and so on. And this, of course, has some effects on outcome indicators like child mortality. And I think that it can be useful to look more into detail where do these higher child mortality rates, for example, come from. Or think about female labor force participation. Why do these women not work? I think these measures could be very interesting to investigate. And the last thing is about are these variables appropriate to measure social institutions? The OECD asked us to aggregate these variables. We didn't code countries. They ask experts to do the country coding, and we are not responsible for this, but we are aware that the variables are problematic and that they sometimes measure regional practices. That's for sure, but nevertheless, we think that these variables are harming women, and that, well, you're right, you have always to go into the context, but if you want to compare countries and if you want to set a sign, you need to aggregate information. And in this case, well, some information inevitably is lost, and some countries are, well, discriminated against, of course, but it's like that. And they are working on better measures also to rank OECD countries. And they first wanted to include OECD countries, and we said no, they get all a zero, and that's the wrong sign for the world. So that's why we didn't rank OECD countries. So that's it.
Okay.
The Valika scheme and similar, you know, these are part of the kind of conditional cash transfers which are the current flavor of the month for the World Bank. And there has been a lot of criticism of some of these schemes in India because they reinforce the patriarchal values. The idea is that you give, you know, you put this amount into the girl's account so long as she doesn't get married till 18, and then when she gets married at 18, she has this money. So it's really presenting it as, you know, the eventual dowry for in reward for delaying your marriage till you're 18 years old, which is, it's not just objectionable, but it's often used in many state governments as an alternative to scholarships for girls, which is really rather disgusting. So I think we have to be very careful about conditional cash transfers of this type.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, all of you. I think let's applaud them.